Please note, we do not have a shiur next Thursday, because it will be the afternoon of Tanis Esther. Hopefully people will be getting ready for Purim in all sorts of ways. Well, a limited number of ways given COVID, but some ways at any rate. The learning this afternoon is dedicated by Rachel Rosenblum for Refuah Shleima for Sarah Leah Bas Shifra. So she should have a Refuah Shleima. We are in Perek Yudchet, chapter 18, and the stories of David's Shiduchim, who David will marry, who David will not marry, who David will not marry and then will marry, or as I titled it on your source sheet, Shaul won't take no. So you remember what we said last week. Shaul offered his older daughter, Merav, to David. He says, marry my daughter and fight the wars of God. We talked about the question of whether he was making good on his promise, alleged promise, in chapter 17, that whoever defeats Goliath will marry his daughter. The language didn't sound like it. The timing didn't sound like it, leading some to suggest that, in fact, that wasn't what was happening here. Either the view of Abarbanel that Shaul never made such a promise, it was just something that people said, or maybe he expressed himself very extravagantly, but he never meant to carry it out. Or, alternatively, the idea that Malbim suggests that he had suggested marrying off his daughter to whoever it would be, but it could have been the younger daughter, which could have necessitated waiting a while. But either way, he offers Merav to David, and David refuses. He says, who am I? Who is my family? What is my life worth? We're not such highfalutin people. I can't do that. And we talked about what David meant with that refusal. And actually, that's where I wanted to start today, is taking apart that refusal by David. We said certain things last week, but I want to expand on why he refuses to marry Merav. Note that this is all within the view that he actually doesn't marry Merav. Remember that we saw last week, there is a Gemara that says that he does marry Merav. But taking the view that his refusal is real. So we said last week that the humility of his refusal is jarring, right? Number one, he's from the family of Yehuda. What do you mean, who is my family? You're from Yehuda. That's the royal tribe. Number two, you've been anointed by Shmuel as the next king. No one else may know it, David, but you know it. So on what basis are you refusing to become the son-in-law of the previous king? You may be thinking about how awkward the family meals are going to be. But is that really what, you know, is this really about humility? Not to mention, we know he's ambitious, right? He went out there to kill Goliath. He put himself forward for that purpose. And after he killed Goliath, he was lauded everywhere. And we praised him with great traits. We talked about how wonderful he is. Back in Perek Tetzayin in 1618, we said he's a Gibor Chayel, he's a Navon Davar, he's an Ish Milchama, he's a warrior. Not to mention, Yehonatan, his future brother-in-law, loves him. He created a brit with him. It's hard to understand this. Nonetheless, on the other side, David has been consistently humble. He was anointed, and he did nothing with it. He went back to taking care of the animals. The only speech we have seen from David to this point is when he says that people should want to fight Goliath because he blasphemed against God, and then he made his speech to Goliath for blaspheming God. We have this quick demural to Eliav when he was criticized, in which he didn't defend himself. He said, I'm just talking. David is not somebody who talks about himself a lot. And when Shaul gives David his armor, David declines, saying, I have no experience with armor. Like, David doesn't seem to take things for himself. He does not seem to be looking for any advantages. And so you could say, despite the fact that his humility here is jarring, you could argue that it is in fact consistent with who he is. There's a side note that was put into the chat, a question about whether whether this is the first time we see Meirav's name, the name Meirav in Tanakh. So I believe the answer is yes, that this is the first time. I have the Bar Ilan here, so I'm just going to do a fast search to verify that. Yeah, this is the first use of the word Meirav in Tanakh. So you have the option of saying that David really is truly being sincere in this regard. Susan. Oops, sorry, I just muted you by accident. I apologize. I was trying to lower the hand. Go ahead. What choice did David have at this stage? Right. He could have rallied people to his cause if he... keep in mind, he's somebody who has extraordinary success with people. The answer could well be that he would have, he had the option of trying to rally people. I see the notes in the chat about the name Meirav. I'm not there right now. I'm going to come back to it. Yes. Yes, it did. So most Mefarshim, most commentators assume that he's being sincere and he's being straightforward here. If you take a look at source number one, we saw this last time, so I'm not going to read it out right now. Radak made the statement that David, Radak read David to make the statement that, yeah, my life's not worth much. It's straight humility. Ralbag is like that as well. Or the take that Abarbanel has, which is Abarbanel reads it as Shaul is saying to David, you should marry into my family and you'll fight the wars of God. And David is saying, you don't need to give me your daughter in order for me to fight the wars of God. I'm willing to do it anyway. As far as David's great traits and David being from Yehuda, so we already noted last week, Ralbag says, David is alluding to the fact that the other side of the family is from Moab. And Moab is an extreme problem in Jewish history, an extreme problem in Tanakh. There's even a ban on marrying the Moabite males. And so maybe that's what David is referring to, and that's what causes him to refuse. Alternatively, take a look at source number three, which I forgot to translate as I was going through the sheet. Oops. So you don't have it translated, but I'm going to say it anyway. Abarbanel picks up on something that David says later. When Shaul offers his second daughter, Michal, to David, David refuses, saying he is Rash v'nikle. Rash Reishin. Take a look at Pasuk Chaf Gimel, sentence 23. The Rash Reishin means indigent. Nikle can either mean, it's the very end of that pasuk, Nikle can either mean a lightweight or somebody who doesn't have honor. Somebody who is, like the word kalon, kuf lamed vav nun. So on that, Don Isaac Abarbanel in source 3 says, Ech eshtadel lihitchatein bamelech. How could I make the effort of trying to put myself forward to marry the king's daughter? Vahu ol gadol. That's a great responsibility. Umasa kaved, a heavy burden. Levakesh mohar umatan lebat hamelech. To seek a mohar and gift for the daughter of the king. I'm going to come back to the word mohar in a moment. Vani ish rash v'nikla, I'm broke. I can't afford that kind of thing. That's beyond my pay grade. So says Abarbanel, that David is indigent by royal standards. And maybe that's part of what causes him to decline. The word mohar as it's used here, this is a side note, but it's worth knowing. Anybody know what the word mohar means? It's a fascinating thing. Yeah. So the Chumash talks about giving mohar bitzulot, and you also have in the story of Shechem, harbu alai mohar umatan ve'etna. right? The Shechem wanting to marry Dinah, they says, give me a statement of what I have to give as mohar. Diane writes dowry in the chat, but it's the reverse of a dowry. It's what the groom is supposed to pay. But what's interesting... Sorry? Well, no, there would still be a dowry potentially coming in from her family. But this was the groom's payment. But what's interesting about it is that in Islamic cultures, they have something called either mohar or mohr, M-O-H-R, is what they call it. And it's a payment from the groom's family to, or from the groom to the bride or the bride's family. And it is deferred to the end of the marriage. Does this sound familiar to you? Like a ketubah, precisely. There's a lot of discussion in the Gemara and Kiddushin in a few different places as to whether the ketubah that we have is d'oraisa or d'rabbanan. Is it a biblical obligation or is it a rabbinic obligation? The ketubah is a payment that the groom agrees to give to his wife, which we understand to be in the event that either he predeceases her or if the marriage ends in divorce. And there's a lot of discussion as to whether it's a biblical obligation or a rabbinic obligation. If it's a biblical obligation, it goes back to mohar. That's the source for it. So it's very interesting to see that they have this mohar payment reflected here, you know, reflected in the Chumash as a pre-Sinai institution. And there's more to be said about this, but I just wanted to highlight that because he uses the word mohar and it's going to be used in general in this conversation. So, going back to where we were, the commentators assume that David is sincere, helped by the fact that he has Moab in his closet, as well as by the fact that he is not so wealthy, which means that back in chapter 17, when David was talking to people about killing Goliath and the offer of the king's daughter and all that, David was not playing it up for his own enrichment because he refuses it. However, commentators go even further with this, and I think this is what we had said at the end last time. They suggest that David thinks Shaul is mocking him. Did we get to that last time? Sort of. Okay. David thinks Shaul is mocking him. This comes up in the commentators when they talk about the offer of Michal to David. Take a look on your sheet at source number 4, please, and look at what Radak says. V'nira ki David mashal ki ado mehama'aseh. It appears that David refuses the offer of Michal. Why? Lefi sheitel bo barishona. Because Shaul mocked him the first time. He thinks Shaul was mocking him. Lefiha chutzrach Shaul. Well, actually, the rest of the sentence we'll get back to. We're not there yet. Even suggesting the marriage is an act of mockery. Or, alternatively, and this we did say last time, that maybe David thinks that Merav marrying Adriel instead of David was Shaul's decision. Mitzudat David, in source number 5, mentions this idea that David thinks that this was that this was something that Shaul had arranged. Dabru el David, when Shaul tells his servants to tell David that he wants David to marry Michal, Mitzudat David writes, Al ki David lo anahu, because David didn't answer him about Michal. B'choshvo ki mehatel bo kasher hetel bo im Meirav. He thinks that Shaul is mocking him as he mocked him with Meirav. B'choshvo shemidat avia kibla kiddushin me'acher. Thinking that Shaul was part of that. Malbim has this idea also. So within all of what we're saying here, David is sincerely refusing. Again, unlike the Gemara that says that he actually married Meirav, David is refusing, whether humility alone or whether it's also because of the Moabite background and his own relative poverty, as well as the possibility that he thinks Shaul is mocking him. Clear? Yes, Janine.
So where did they
Right. So it's basically a debate, which we're going to come back to in a little bit. But it's basically a debate about how it was that she ended up with this fellow Adriel. You only have two options. Option number one is the king did it, and option number two is that she did it herself. So those who think that Shaul did it don't understand, because he offered her to David. And so that leads us to say, well, it must be she accepted it, even though, as you know, the language doesn't support it. The language sounds like she was given, which is what David thinks is happening. Ricky and then Susan. Ricky, you have to unmute. Oops, you were unmuted.
Okay. I always thought it was because it had something to do with it, because she wanted to marry David.
Well, that's great, but it's not supported by the Psukim. We've got no language here to support it.
That's a possibility.
Why?
Because we're looking for possibilities, and it's not that remote, so you have said, hey, here's a nice guy, so she can have David do it herself.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not seeing it. I hear you, but I'm not seeing it. Susan.
They mentioned Adriel's name.
Yes.
Usually when they mention a name and not just somebody,
yeah,
there's a reason. We always learn that there's a reason why names are mentioned.
Yep.
And well, I don't recall ever hearing of Adriel before, so, and we don't know what shape it's from. So I wondered why his name is mentioned.
Right. So I think I mentioned last time, we're going to come back to Adriel. He's going to show up again in Shmuel, not for a while, but when he comes up again, maybe we'll have a better sense of something about him. But right now, they're not giving us anything to work with. Yeah. He may be the son of Barzillai, who was an ally of David, but we're not there yet. Okay. I did want to note one comment from Mitzudat David that I thought was interesting, which supports the idea of the Gemara in Sanhedrin that David actually does marry her. If you take a look the best way to do it is. To take a look, well, first at the language in Pasuk Yudchet. Okay? So, the language there in Pasuk Yudchet, it's sentence 18. David says to Shaul, who am I? What is my life? Which we've said is, what is my life worth? Mishpachat Avi b'Yisrael, the family of my father in Israel, which we've talked about. Ki ehyeh chasan lamelech. So, the way we've been reading it is, what am I worth that I should be a groom to the king? Now take a look at source number 6, please. He reads it differently. He says, Ki ehyeh, she'ehyeh ra'uy v'hagun liyos chasan hamelech, that I should be appropriate and worthy to be the king's son-in-law. Uka'omer, it's as though he was saying, Halo bevadai davar gadol hu elai. This is really a big deal for me. V'chol asher tomar e'eseh ba'avur zeh. Whatever you ask of me, I will do. So back to the Gemara's view, he does marry her. He's not saying, I can't. He's saying, I'm not worthy, but tell me what to do, and I'll do it. And according to this view, he marries Merav. You follow? That's the idea here. Okay. So, with this in mind, let's now see what happens next with Michal. Shoshana.
I have a question. After we knew that he is going to be king, why did you claim, like, I'm not worthy, I'm nothing? He knows that he's going to be the future king, so Michal wouldn't be so wrong for him.
So first of all, again, we haven't gotten to Michal yet. But second, as I said before, this was our opening discussion today. The fact that he has been anointed as king does make us wonder, and we weigh that on the side of saying it's odd to think of him as being humble here. However, when you really think about it, marrying Shaul's daughter doesn't make him any more eligible to be king. Shaul's line is done. Marrying Shaul's daughter isn't really an assist here. Just something to think about. But I think the point goes back to what I said before, which is he has reason not to be humble, but yet we see this humility from him, which may be assisted by the points that we made about him being mocked, about Moab and his background, and about his lack of funds. But let's take a look at Pasuk Chaf, sentence 20. Vate'ehav Michal bas Shaul es David. Michal loves David. Vayagidu l'Shaul, and they told Shaul. Vayishar hadavar be'enav. And this was good in his eyes. You know, let me do my introduction first, and then we'll read the Pasuk. I launched in too quickly. Introduction to this section. The following here, with Michal's love for David and the offer, seems to be shortly after Merav refuses. But we aren't given any real chronology. It doesn't say, this is the next, like we before we saw it, it said, and the next day, Shaul did. Here we don't get that kind of a statement. Rabbi Yossi, in the Gemara, is actually going to float the remarkable idea that this happens after Merav dies. We'll see that. So in other words, something has to have happened between the two stories. Commentators know that that's difficult for reasons beyond the scope of our discussion right now. But what we're going to see in this passage here is Shaul taking, so to speak, another swing of the spear at David. He tried with Merav. It didn't work. Now he's going to try with Michal, and he's going to make another attempt to get David killed. That's what we're going to see. So, now let's see. So, in Pasuk Chav, in sentence 20, we read that Shaul finds out that Michal loves David. Very nice. He's very happy about that. So, Vayomer Shaul says, Etznena lo, I'm going to give her to him. Usihi lo la mokesh, and that will be a cause of stumbling for him. Usihi vo yad plishtim, and once again, the plishtim will get him. Vayomer Shaul el David, and Shaul says to David, Bishtayim tischatein bihayom. That is a very hard set of words. Those last words in that sentence, what Shaul says to David, is very hard to translate. Someone who has an English translation, tell me what you have. Susan, you have a pink edition. How does that translate, Bishtayim tischatein bihayom? It is 21, yes.
21.
Yeah, the next part. So that's one way to deal with the problem. They're quoting Rashi. They're quoting Rashi. One of two. Sorry, Jeanette, what do you have? That's the art scroll. Radak is similar. Radak says, I offered you both. The first one, let me explain in case anyone isn't catching why this is an issue. The Hebrew literally translated is, you will marry two of mine today. That's why this is a problem. So Rashi says, it means one out of two. Radak elaborates. He says, I offered you both. The first one didn't work out. So marry the second one. And Ralbag is very similar. The, through my two, you will become my son-in-law today. That sounds like Malbim, actually. You could read that with Radak, but Malbim says, I'm going to give you one of them, one way or the other. Whether I'm going to give you Merav against her will, or I'm going to give you Michal with her consent. But you're marrying one of my daughters. That's sort of like, you know, it's a blend of Radak and Malbim. However, this is where that Gemara I mentioned before becomes relevant about David marrying both of them. Jump on the source sheet, please. to source number 11, Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi believes that David married Merav and married Michal. Well, that raises a halachic problem, right? You're not allowed to marry two sisters, right? A man, because the Torah says so. So that's a problem. The fact that Yaakov marries Rachel and Leah, the usual answer, stop. The usual answer is one of two things. Either that that it's before the Torah is given, and therefore this is not prohibited, in the same way that you find certain other things that go on before the Torah is given that would become prohibited later. So this is one of them, and that's the simplest answer. However, there's another answer that's offered, which is that it's because he's outside of Israel, and somehow that makes it okay. And that's why Rachel dies when they come back into Israel, because he can't be married to two, so the second one passes away. I see Leona's reaction to that one. That was priceless. That's too bad I'm not recording video. But the point is that in general, it's unquestionable. And the Torah makes it very, very clear. You shall not take a woman to her sister. You're not allowed to marry two sisters. So the question then is, what's going on here? So take a look at source number 11, where the students ask Rabbi Yossi that question. If you believe he really married Merav, how could he then marry Michal? Amar Lan, to which he answered, Michal achar misas Merav nasa. He marries her after Merav has already passed away, which means some time may have elapsed. There's a separate Gemara about Michal raising Merav's children, and that may fit into this as well. The problem with that is that there are five of them, and the question is how much time elapsed here then. Well, if you take that view, remember we noted that the Abarbanel and Rabag think he reigns longer, but yes, you have that possibility. Okay, Eti and then Ruth. Adriel. Yeah. So the if I remember correctly, the way that it's read is that David tries to marry Merav. No, but Rabbi Yossi believes it actually works. I'd have to go back and look at the Gemara again. They do deal with it, but I don't remember the answer. Right, but I still don't think that fits the psukim. You can read it that way, but I don't think you're. What are you going to do with the words "vehi be'et teit merav"?
When he was offering her to David, she was already promised to Adriel. And then
you're reading nitna as had already been. I'm not so not so into that. But then it wouldn't be be'et teit. It wouldn't be be'et teit, it would be kodem teit, or lifnei teit.
Why?
Yeah. It's not, but once you say while, that means they're happening simultaneously, not this happened before. I wouldn't say to you, while the sun was shining, I wouldn't say to you, while the sun was shining, it was raining, if what I meant was, it had rained earlier in the day. It's just, I understand what you're trying to do with the word nitna, but I don't think it fits with be'et teit. I just don't think it works. Yes. But again, what do you do with be'et teit? It's hard. I think it's very hard to make that fit. Ruth, you were going to say? Okay. So, what we're seeing here is Shaul say, I would like for you to marry Michal, whether it's one of my daughters or whether it's you're actually marrying both. That's the offer that he makes. And I'm going to pause on that point and go back to Pasuk Chaf and this thing of Michal loving David. Because this is very interesting on a bunch of fronts. First of all, take a look, please, at source number 7. Rabbi Dr. Chaim Angel, I quoted this article when we started the chapter, When Love and Politics Mix. Following David's meteoric rise to national fame, Saul's daughter Michal loved him. This is the only reference in the entire Bible to a woman said to love her man. And I went looking, and I can't find another one. Though no doubt Michal was marrying a hero, there appears to be genuine affection in her reaction as well. When Shaul sent his troops to capture David, Michal heroically put herself at risk by siding with David over her father. That's coming up in the next chapter. So there's genuine affection in this relationship from her towards him. But I'm bothered by the dynamics of this sentence. Yes, Leona. So you're with Mitzudat David, and with the approach that says that this isn't a genuine refusal, and that is just, you know, it's humility perhaps, but it's not an out refusal. And like I said, you can sustain that view regardless of what one thinks happened with Merav in the end. Whether you think that he married her, whether you think that she had already been promised to someone before, whether you think she's being given now, doesn't change the fact that you can read his refusal in that light, as Mitzudat David does. But I want to see what we're doing here. This sentence is hard, sentence 20. Michal loves David. They told Shaul, and Shaul said, "This is great." Right? And he tries to marry off Michal to David. So here's my first question. Why did it take Shaul, why did it take Michal expressing love for David for Shaul to try this? With Merav, he didn't ask her, "Do you love David?" The text never said Merav loves David and therefore Shaul says, "Hey, let me do this." If he wants to do this, if he wants to try to marry off his daughter to David, and for whatever reason, Merav isn't happening, then he just says, "Okay, let me try number two." Right? Why is this spurred by her feelings? Yeah, Susan. Are you answering this, or are you on a separate point?
No.
Okay. Okay, it's a possibility. Definitely a possibility. Claudette. You have to unmute. So the love is gonna be a good cover for him.
Like a cover, like a block, you know.
Yeah, could be.
And David will trust this one. Trust in order so much.
Right. Could be.
That he wouldn't see what Saul is actually.
Right. Could be. Jeanette.
Talking about
Yeah.
Problematic.
Yes, it is. It really is. So I want to come back to this because I have an idea for why this triggers Shaul, and some of you have come close to it. But I have another question here. Who told Shaul about Michal loving David? What? Where did that come from? Someone's in her diary? Yeah. Yeah. So actually, Leona, take a look at source number 8. Source number 8 suggests exactly that. Rav Bazak. Savir lahaniach, he says. It's logical to assume, and that's all he has as evidence. Shemichal shalcha l'shaul shlichim levakesh et David. Michal took the lead. She says, I want to marry him. And what I do think maybe could support Rav Bazak's contention is the fact that we're about to see, as the psukim go forward, the use of Shaul's servants as an official channel. Whereas with Meirav, Shaul speaks to David directly. With Michal, Shaul uses his servants to go back and forth, but according to most commentators, it's an official thing. It's not like a back channel thing. It's like, we're speaking on behalf of the king. So maybe she actually uses them to say, I want my father to know, I am interested. Why doesn't she tell him directly? I have no idea. I have nothing on that. But that's the way that you could support Rav Bazak's contention. Well, let's ask the question now that you have to ask. Does David love Michal? Michal loves David, that's clear. What about the other way around? You tell me.
Does he know?
I don't know. I mean, he's been hanging out in the house, playing music, you know. Based on what we said when we talked about Yehonatan at the start of the chapter, we had the point that Rabbi Dr. Angel quoted from Susan Ackerman to say that in relationships in Tanakh, as a general rule, we're only told X loves Y. We're not given reciprocal language. Take a look at number 9, where I brought it for you again. Ackerman maintains that generally the more dominant party is said to love, even though the loving relationship may well be reciprocal. Therefore, the omission of references to David loving Shaul, Yehonatan, or Michal does not necessarily indicate any lack of love from David toward these characters. In fact, it would have been surprising had there been explicit reference to David's love, because that's not the way the Torah describes relationships. So you have the possibility that there is love. Ralbag supports this view. But in order to understand Ralbag's statement, you have to jump forward to Shmuel Bet. In Shmuel Bet, we have the following story. They're bringing the Aron of God, the Ark, to Yerushalayim. David is dancing in front of it with abandon. He comes back home, and Michal mocks him. Right? Michal mocks him. And we are told, after David gives a very harsh response to Michal, we're told that she does not have any children for the rest of her life. So take a look at source number 10, where Ralbag comments on that verse. Ki'ilo yomar, as if to say, shezeh ma'amar hayasiba lihimana mimena privaten, that this statement was the reason children were withheld from her. What do you mean? Ki'ilo ahav osa David ba'ofen shahaya ohev osa kodem zeh. Because from this day forward, David doesn't love her the way he did before. Because of that conversation, that was the killer conversation for them. His affection for her is now reduced, and apparently paying her less attention, whatever, she's not producing children after that. Which, when Ralbag says that, means there was love before that. Now, was it there from the very beginning? Maybe, maybe not. Maybe that's a love that developed after she saved his life. In chapter 19. It could be that Ralbag is not a basis for saying that there was love there from the start, then maybe here it's really not. Nonetheless, it's a possible basis for saying that there is love. Rav Bazak is adamant that there is no love here. He believes that David is going to go into this as a political marriage. And we'll see what his evidence is, but I don't think we're going to get to it today. So Shaul has renewed hope. Yes, I can marry David to my daughter, and I can have the Plishtim kill him. He pitches the idea to David. Marry my two daughters, one of my two daughters, whatever. What is David's response? What? Is it? Where do you see that? Ah, who's he talking to at that point, though? Who's he talking to at that point? The servants. What's his reaction to Shaul? What's his reaction to Shaul? No, but that's later. He didn't say anything here. That's when he's talking to the servants. So Ralbag and possibly Radak read it the way everyone here is trying to read it, which is that yes, David declined from humility the same way he did before. The text just doesn't bother to say so. Mitzudat David, though, contends maybe not. This is part of David feeling like he's being made fun of. He's being mocked. So he doesn't even answer Shaul. So now, in Pasuk Chaf Bet, in sentence 22, Shaul goes the route of having the servants talk to David. And we're going to see two different views as to whether this is an official communication or not. Take a look in sentence 22. Vayitzav Shaul es Avadav. Shaul commanded his servants, Dabru el David balat. Speak to David quietly, under the radar. Lemor saying, Hinei chafetz b'cha hamelech v'l'chol avadav v'ahivucha. The king loves you. All his servants love you. Ve'ata hischatein b'melech. You should become his son-in-law. Why are you refusing? You should totally go this route. Everybody loves you, and the king wants you to do so. To which David responds, sorry, this is what Shaul tells the servants to do. So, Pasuk Chav Gimel. Vayidabru avdei Shaul be'oznei David es hadrim ha'eila. The servants say this to David. Vayomer David hanekala ve'nechem ischatein ba'melech. As we said before, he says, is this a light thing to you? Or this is, you know, not an honorable thing? Vanochi ish rash v'nikla. I am poor. I am a lightweight. Vayagidu avdei Shaul lo le'mor. Kadavarim ha'eila. Diber David. And Shaul's servants go back to report to him and say, we're not getting any traction here. David is rejecting the offer. Now, they're going to continue to be the channel to David all the way through his marriage to Michal, coming up in the next psukim. But there are two ways to look at this. One way to look at it, and Susan, I see your hand, but I want to explain this, and we're running out of time. One way to look at it, and this is Radak, and this is Abarbanel, and this is Mitzudat David, is that this is an official channel. This is not, even though it said Balat, speak to him in secret, it just means speak to him gently, speak to him quietly, convince him, cajole him to do this. And the point is to convey Shaul's sincerity. I refer you back now to the opening sources on the sheet. Okay, not the opening sources, but source number 4. Remember that we read Radak, right, saying that David thought he was being mocked? Radak is speaking about this text here. V'nira ki David mashach yado me'amaseh. He says David doesn't want to do it. Why? B'choshvo, sorry, l'fi she'etel b'bar yishona, because the king mocked him, he thinks. That's why he has to command his servants to speak to David in order to convey his sincerity. Same thing in source number 5, from Mitzudat David. This is what leads Shaul to give the instruction, and the servants are speaking for him. That's going to work down the line, because what we're going to see is that the servants, at least as explained by certain commentators like Radak, become the official channel for David to deliver his gift to Shaul. The servants are an official channel. That's one way to do it. Ralbag disagrees with everybody, which isn't a shocker. He does that. Take a look at source number 12. Ralbag says the servants are supposed to be speaking on their own. This is not supposed to be Shaul sending them. And Ralbag says what a lot of you have been anticipating already since last week, which is that maybe there's a thought that David knows what Shaul is planning. Take a look at number 12. V'Shaul chashav shetiyah sibak yishol hiskim David v'zesha yirashi yipol biyad plishtim. Shaul thinks maybe David is refusing because he worries that he's going to fall to the Philistines. Ulezet sival avadav shidabru al David baseiser. So therefore he wants them to speak to David quietly in secret. V'yodiyu lo shamelech hafeitz bo v'chol avadav ahivuhu, to tell him, no, the king wants you, everybody loves you. K'dei sheyachshov David she'ein kavanat Shaul lahapilo biyad plishtim. So that he will recognize Shaul doesn't want you to be in danger. Shaul loves you. It's a private conversation. That's the idea. Which, by the way, supports the idea that when we've been saying all along that this is a plan to get David into the hands of the Plishtim, it doesn't just mean he's going to have the title of king's son-in-law and therefore the Plishtim will attack him. It's that Shaul will actually do something to put him in a dangerous position. That's what we're talking about. And now I come back to my question about why Shaul only tries this once Michal has expressed her affection. Because now it gives him an opening where David will not suspect his sincerity. Because Michal really does love him. This isn't just an arranged marriage. There's actually a feeling of love here. That's the idea. Susan, you've been waiting very patiently. Thank you. David didn't know that. Remember, David didn't know that he had tried to kill him. No, we were very clear in the text and in the commentators that the turning away was not knowingly. That's the point. That's why Shaul reads it as God's hand is with him. Idea that he doesn't like to be manipulated, but I think Ralbag adding the idea that David suspects something specific as a plot, I think that carries a lot of weight. Granted that most of the commentators are reading this a little bit differently, but I think what Ralbag is saying has a lot to it. Right, but there is no, right, that's exactly the point. You're not describing a specific relationship between individuals, you're describing a metaphorical relationship between God and the Jews. In the same way, and we said that when we first started the chapter, we had said it then also, we said that's, Shir HaShirim is a different story altogether. You can't, you can't draw analogies from that. What we're talking about here is specifically relations between two human beings. That's the idea. Jeanette, and then Leona. Sorry?
So that she does, she reads without all the commentaries, it is love.
But it's not, because no one's ever named. It's not a description of two people.
Oh,
yeah. Jeanette?
So I find that's a very puzzling idea. It doesn't make sense to me within the shop, because obviously I'm reading a plus or two ahead,
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. Jeanette's question is this, for those who have not yet read ahead. David is going to say yes to marry Michal after Shaul says to him, I want you to go maim 100 Philistines. If David is really concerned that Shaul is trying to get him hurt, presumably he should have read that instruction as further to the same point, confirming that Shaul wants to get him hurt. And I hear you. I definitely hear your point. On the other hand, I really like Ralbag's way of dealing with the word balat, that he's saying to speak to him privately, not as an official emissary. You can square that circle. You can say it's still not as an official emissary, but it's not about this fear of, that Shaul is trying to harm him. You can make that work.
Everything would make sense.
Right. Right.
The fact that we don't hear a yes until after he makes a very unreasonable decision.
Right.
That should have red flags all over the place.
Right. No, it's true. You're right. You're right. Leona. Right, so you're with the idea that it's a back channel, but you're not with the idea necessarily that it's about the fear of a plot. Okay, so let's get started on where this goes next. Let's see what happens here. Pasuk Chaf Hei, sentence 25. Vayomer Shaul. Shaul says, Ko samru le David. Here's what you should tell David. David has now refused to these servants of Shaul. So here's what you should tell him. Ein chefetz lamelech b'mohar. I don't need you to pay me anything. I'm a king. What do I need from you? Ki b'me'a arlos plishtim li'inakim v'oyvei hamelech. I have these enemies, these Philistines. So I want you to punish the Philistines. Bring me 100 foreskins of the Philistines. Shaul thinking, hey, this is a new way to endanger David. I don't have to wait until he's married to my daughter. He can get endangered right now. Set a fee. Now, the reason why this is going to work fits Abarbanel well. Abarbanel said David's refusal was, I'm broke. This is a currency that you have. Now you don't have to worry about being broke anymore. So that fits really well. And it's a new version, again, of a way to harm David. Take a look at source number 13, please, where Malbim explains why this is such a good idea. He says, "Im lochamim v'hargim b'derech milchama." If you fight people as a war, right? If you fight people and you kill them in a war, "Ein b'zeh mistama or mastema al hasar tzava." So no one holds it personally against the military officers who carried it out. This is what happens in battle. But if you attack people who are just minding their own business, and you cut off the arla in a disgraceful manner, that's not war, that's a terrorist attack. That's all that is. That would cause them to really want to kill David. So what he's trying to do, as Jeanette already noted, is really to endanger David. And yet, David says, ah, that's something I can wrap my mind around. Pasuk Chavav, Vayagidu Abadav leDavid es hadvarim ha'ela, the servants say this to David, Vayishara davar beinei David lishatein ba'melech. And David says, oh, yeah, that's a good way to do it. Now I can marry the king's daughter. Velo mal'u hayamim. And time doesn't even go by. David's going to do it fast. The servants convey it to David. This is surely an official communication, right? Because otherwise, by what authority are they conveying this demand? So this is above board and official. And David is now ready for it. Velo mal'u hayamim. Time is not full. Radak reads that as beating a deadline, meaning it's not just that they're speaking for Shaul to make the offer, but there's a deadline for it, and David beats the deadline. Now, I want to talk about why David changes his mind, but we can't do that in 2 minutes. Instead, I wanted to point out something else that I think is interesting as a pattern in the structure. Shaul tried to kill David with 2 swings of the spear, right? And David was saved. Shaul is trying again with 2 swings of the spear against David, first with Merav, and then with Michal, and again, David was spared. But now he thinks he's gonna succeed, because now David actually says yes. I just thought the parallel of trying to hit him twice, not succeeding, trying to marry him twice, not succeeding, was very interesting, and the twice is gonna play out in terms of what David is gonna do with this request from Shaul. So what I want to do next time, which keep in mind is in 2 weeks, God willing, is I want to talk about why David says yes. I want to talk about some very interesting language that's used in that regard in the Psukim. I want to talk about whether David now loves Michal, that he's now saying yes, or is this a political marriage? And along the way, discuss the parallels between David and Michal, and Yaakov and Rachel. And along with that, maybe have a little bit of discussion about what in the world this payment is. Like, you could have asked him to kill 100 plishtim. What is this Mea Arlos plishtim? What in the world is that about? So maybe we'll talk about that as well. So all of that, God willing, in 2 weeks. I wish you a Purim Sameach. Looking forward to continuing. And a good Shabbos as well. Thank you. Thank you.